The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a major leaguer's second chance at life from the Reader's Digest. And there's a picture of a young man wearing a San Francisco Giants uniform with a ball bat on his shoulder. A suicide attempt nearly ended Drew Robinson's story. Now he is adding the most remarkable chapters yet. On April 16, 2020, Drew Robinson woke up, sat at his kitchen table, and finished writing a note that would explain to his family and friends why he had decided to end his life. I hope you guys realize that no one could have seen this coming to prevent it, because of how hard I tried to hide it. It's no one's fault. He apologized to Deanna, Daryl, Renee, Brittany, and Chad, the fine people he loved the most, the ones who knew him best and still couldn't see the sadness suffocating him. Even they believed the avatar he had created, a Major League Baseball player, handsome, charming, funny, with an easy laugh and a big smile. At 27, Drew was living his dream, and yet wanting to die. At about 8 p.m., while sitting on his couch, he lifted his handgun, pressed it against his right temple, and pulled the trigger. That was supposed to be the end of Drew Robinson's story, but over the next 20 hours, he would come to realize it was the beginning of another. It's 6 days before Christmas 2020. Drew is feeling thankful. He wants to tell the world what happened so he can heal and maybe others heal too. He knows there are a million questions. How did he live for nearly an entire day with a giant hole on the right side of his head with no medical attention? Few people survive self-inflicted gunshot wounds to the head. Even rarer are those who emerge with clarity and purpose. More than anything, Drew wants to tell his story to help others recognize the awfulness of suicide. He didn't need his family to see what they saw, to go through what they went through, to spend every day wondering whether he's really okay, whether he's going to do it again. The pain of a suicide, or even an attempted suicide, is not limited to one person. That's important. The pain of a suicide or attempted suicide is not limited to one person. How can I go through this and not try to help other people, Drew says. This was a huge, painful sign that I'm supposed to help people get through something that they don't think is winnable. Drew is convinced that he's meant to do something. That much was clear when he opened his eyes and realized he was still alive. Moments after shooting himself, Drew looked around, confused, and thought, "What happened? Why am I still here?" He saw blood everywhere. He held his head, trying to stem the bleeding. It didn't help. He decided to shower. When he stepped in, disorientation hit. He slipped and smacked his head on the handle, square on the entry room. Still didn't hurt. He dried off, then collapsed on his bed. The blood in his mouth turned his stomach, so he returned to the bathroom. As he bent over the toilet, his head struck the porcelain. He peeled himself up and tried to brush his teeth. How ridiculous, he thought. A guy with a hole in his head is brushing his teeth. It was around midnight, 4 hours after he pulled the trigger, as Drew collapsed onto his bed again and closed his eyes. He thought, "This is where I'm going to die." Drew Robinson grew up on the outskirts of Las Vegas. He was Renee and Daryl Robinson's youngest child. His sister Brittany and his brother Chad found him a tag-along and an annoyance, the archetypical little brother who just wanted attention and love. Renee and Daryl divorced. The Robinson family splintered. The boys went to live with Daryl. Brittany stayed with Renee. They found common ground in one place, the baseball field. Drad grew up to be 6'5" and was considered one of the best Major League Baseball draft prospects in the country. Drew was undersized but skilled, smooth, and natural. Almost every weekend, the Robinsons gathered at a baseball tournament, the parents putting aside any animus to support the boys. Chad, who was drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers in 2006, set a near-impossible standard, and Drew considered anything short of failure. He craved perfection. He made varsity at Silverado High School as a freshman, hit growth spurt before his junior year, and turned into a prospect, 6'1", with a powerful swing and the ability to play shortstop and the outfield, the best player at Silverado since his brother. He was popular, especially with the girls. Drew went from one to the next until he met Deanna Angelilova. For Deanna, it was a something magnetic about Drew. Even if it wasn't an obvious match, he could be loud, bombastic, always trying to look and act cool. But neither Diana nor the world, it's an odd spelling, it's D-A-I-A-N-A, so it's, I think it's Diana, No other world could see Drew how he saw himself, not as the Joker, but as the joke. Drew would talk to himself as if he had an ever-present companion who shared his misery. When something would go wrong, Drew says, the voice in my head would answer, "Well, of course, that's just how your life goes. You don't get to enjoy things." Over his last two high school seasons, Drew was one of the best players in the historic Vegas area, class of 2010, that includes Bryce Harper, the first pick in the Major League Baseball draft. The Texas Rangers chose Drew in the fourth round and the 36th pick. He received a $198,000 signing bonus. At 18, Drew was a professional baseball player. This accelerated adulthood for him. Drew was not only paying bills, but also navigating politics, managing disappointment, and figuring out how to live in a universe designed to weed out the weak. Drew's brother already lived this reality. The 4:30 a.m. wake-up calls for workouts, the long bus rides, the arm surgeries. Had Drew and Chad spoken more, Drew would have known how pro ball worked, how its physical elements paled in comparison to its mental toll. But talking wasn't their thing. Drew would have to navigate the harsh learning curve on his own, including years of struggling to ascend through the ranks of the minor leagues. Baseball exposed cracks in his facade of stability. His adoration for the game vacillated. He loved baseball one day and loathed it the next. "I did it!" That was the text Drew sent his family after being told he had made the Rangers' opening day roster in 2017. This was the dream. Drew got two at-bats in the Rangers' third game. 7 days later, he was demoted to AAA. The big leagues can be cruel this way. He returned to the majors in May 28th and was sent back down on the 29th. He got called again on the 24th of June, hammered a home run for his first major league hit on the 25th, and was demoted on the 26th. The Rangers summoned him again on July 7th, and he remained with the team for the rest of the season. Finally, he was a big leaguer. Although Drew acted as if he belonged, he still felt otherwise. In the clubhouse, he questioned every answer he gave to reporters. On the field, he second-guessed minutia, how he stood during the national anthem, how he looked running to position between innings. In December 2018, the Rangers traded Drew to the St. Louis Cardinals. He decided this would be a fresh start. He proposed to Diana, said yes, and they set a wedding date. Drew made the Cardinals' big league roster out of spring training. But a week into the season, he was sent down to AAA. He returned on March 31st, played three games, then was sent back down again. He returned on April 15th and was demoted again the next day. Up on April 22nd, down on April 23rd. He hurt his non-throwing left elbow and needed surgery. On August 28, 2019, the Cardinals released him. The companion's voice grew louder, and Drew grew more depressed. He knew that he needed help, so he started to see a therapist and read self-development books. He wanted to see himself the way he believed everyone else saw themselves. The San Francisco Giants signed Drew to a non-guaranteed minor league contract in January 6, 2020. He worried he was destined to end up in the minors again. He worried that he wasn't good for Deanna, and that he would never would be. Drew called off the wedding. A question brewed in his mind. Who would care if I'm gone? When he couldn't answer, he started to plan his death. On March 12, 2020, COVID-19 shut down baseball. Drew returned to his empty house in Las Vegas. A week later, he went to a gun store to purchase a weapon. At 7 a.m. on April 17th, Drew woke up and the pain finally hit. When he moved, pieces of his face shifted. He considered getting the gun and trying again. For hours, he slipped in and out of consciousness. The pain worsened. He tried to sit up but collapsed on the floor. He was thirsty. He mustered the strength to stand. He lurched into the kitchen, filled a cup with water, and to help with the pain, he swallowed Tylenol. Walking back to his room, he stopped in the bathroom and looked at his face. It was unrecognizable. The bullet had mangled his right eye. Thought about baseball. Whether anyone can play with one eye. He wondered if thinking about the future meant he was trying to survive. That Tylenol. Was it some subconscious sign that he wanted to heal? Around 3:30 p.m., Drew was sitting in the same spot on the couch where he had shot himself. On his coffee table were his gun and his cell phone. He picked up the pistol with his left hand, held the phone in his right hand. He punched the numbers 911. He could pull the trigger, or he could tap the green dial button. It came to him, he says, in an instant. "I want to live," Drew told himself. He called 911. "I need an ambulance," he said. "I tried to commit suicide last night, and I made it through. I have a U-tole in my head and I'm in a lot of pain. Police rushed to his house at 3:57 p.m. Drew was loaded into an ambulance for transfer to the University Medical Center Trauma Center in Las Vegas. A 9mm bullet exited a handgun traveling upwards of 750 miles per hour. When the bullet entered Drew's head, it almost immediately ruptured his right eyeball. It also fractured his frontal sinus, causing the leakage of cerebrospinal fluid, which poses a significant infection risk. The bullet whistled past his left orbital floor and about above his left cheekbone, millimeters from ruining his other eye. Doctors worked wonders putting Drew back together physically. The first surgery was to save his right eyelid. The second replaced the shattered bones around it. The procedure took about 2 hours and returned most of the symmetry to his face. The third was to fix a fracture in his sinus and stem the leakage of cerebrospinal fluid. Drew's right eye was beyond repair. The bullet shredded its insides and severed the optic nerve. On June 11th, UMC Trauma Center scheduled a fourth surgery and enucleation, the removal of Drew's eye. The eye globe was replaced with an implant, which left room in front for a prosthetic eye. Hitting major league pitches, even with two working eyes, is extraordinarily difficult. Doing so with one, and the rear eye at that, is next to impossible. Only one man has lost an eye and played the major leagues. Whammy Douglas, who pitched 47 innings for the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1957. Drew began playing baseball again that July, just 14 weeks after trying to take his own life. He progressed from battling off a tee indoors to fending off live pitches. On October 21, 2020, a ball left his bat and went hissing towards right center field at Las Vegas Ballpark, the AAA stadium, where local pros go for off-season hitting sessions. None of his previous 30 or so swings had yielded a home run, but this ball snuck over the fence. Drew took a slight skip and jogged to first base. He stopped there. He'd save the full trot for a game, on the off chance that someone might offer him a chance to play again. Drew remained in touch with the Giants after getting out of the hospital. In late summer, he asked whether he could speak to the organization's players and staff in recognition of World Suicide Prevention Day on September 10th. Drew figured that if he was going to help others, telling his story would be the most impactful way to do it. The Giants welcomed the idea. Drew arrived at Oracle Park on September 9th. He was nervous. The players, coaches, and other staff gathered around him. He grabbed the microphone. "First, I just want to say thank you for everything," Drew said. "What I've been through the last couple of months has been the most powerful experience." Drew took a deep breath before he continued. "April 16th, around 8 p.m., I shot myself in the head. A day later, I dialed 911. That night, not only was my life saved, but it was restarted." Drew spoke for 7 minutes. He covered the importance of talking about mental health, the need for support from others, and an intention to give baseball another shot. He saw people crying. Drew left San Francisco that day feeling content. If this was the last thing he ever did with the Giants, he felt good about it. On October 22nd, the day after he hit the home run, Drew panicked. He saw that he had missed a text from the Giants manager, Gabe Kapler. "You awake?" it read. Drew called back. When they spoke, Gabe told Drew that the organization cared about him. They wanted people like him around, and they believed he could still play Major League Baseball. The Giants offered Drew a contract with an invitation to minor league spring training. He wouldn't be in the same clubhouse as the big league players. There wouldn't be any guaranteed money or a roster spot. But we'd get a chance to work his way there. Drew couldn't thank Gabe enough. He was going to play baseball again. Following successful spring training, Drew started for the Sacramento River Cats in their first game of the season on May 6, 2021, against the Las Vegas Aviators. Playing once again in the same city where he was born and raised and where he almost died, Drew struggled. He struck out each of his four at-bats, but the crowd still acknowledged him with vociferous cheers, marveling at his remarkable comeback. Then in his fourth game back, and still in Las Vegas, Drew's bat made contact. The ball soared high and far and landed over the back wall. He had hit a home run, the first of three he would go on to hit last year. But mid-season, Drew decided to retire from playing, not from the game itself. Amid his on-field struggles, Drew discussed and ultimately took a job with the Giants front office as a mental health advocate. He wrote on Instagram, "For the Giants to believe I can help other players address their emotional well-being is truly humbling." Drew ended his post with gratitude, saying to his friends, family, teammates, and most importantly to Deanna, "My everything, I thank you." In the drawer of Drew's nightstand lies a small box. Inside is the bullet that burrowed through his head and changed his life. Sometimes he'll remove it, roll it between his index finger and thumb, and remind himself of where he was then and where he is now. "I look at this thing and think, I'm stronger than you," he says. "I'm stronger than I thought I was." And an end note on this: if you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide or is in emotional distress, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK-8255 or at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Health: how our own cells can heal us. Breakthrough treatments in what's called regenerative medicine can be a lifesaver. Anish Job, interesting last name, J-O-B-B, first limped into the office of Riam Shamara, M.D., a sports medicine doctor and pain specialist in Toronto, in 2017. Job had been working as an aide in a long-term care facility, and when her back pain first appeared about a decade earlier, the cause an undiagnosed herniated disc, which had pinched a nerve. As the pain worsened, Job gritted her teeth and tried to keep going. Now she was desperate for help. "It's been my calling in life, taking care of people," says Job, now 55. "But working with frail seniors involves a lot of lifting, bending, and pulling. I had a drawer full of pain medication. None of it was working. I'd snap," she says. "My husband and I came close to getting divorced." In November 2016, Job could scarcely walk even a short distance. "My doctor finally said, you will end up in a wheelchair if you don't stop working there." Job's internist referred her to Dr. Shama, who began by administering nerve block injections, similar to an epidural, every few weeks. They held the pain at bay for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, but then it always returned. Historically, the treatment of chronic back pain has been less than ideal. We've discussed this before. Sometimes causing patients to become addicted to opioids or to undergo major, often unsuccessful, spinal fusion surgery, which is suitable for only about 1 in 20 patients. Hunting for a solution beyond these limited options, Dr. Shama turned to stem cells, the building block cells found not just in embryos, but also in various tissues in adult bodies, which can generate an array of different cells. Specifically, he'd been studying bone marrow stem cells, and he invited Job to participate in a study with 23 other patients, cautioning that there were no guarantees. The procedure was to Job's own bone marrow, and it had been proved safe. The hope is that by injecting the stem cells, known as mesenchymal stem cells, or MSCs, into the patient herniated disc, would regenerate and heal the damaged tissue. An MRI of Job's spine showed that two discs were causing her a problem, which was good news as far as the procedure was concerned. Out of 5 levels in the lumbar spine, 1 or 2 showing damage tells you that the spine hasn't deteriorated everywhere, says Dr. Shama. By contrast, when you have 5 levels of disc disease, in other words, the spine is really messed up, there's not a lot you can do. And there's a picture of Dr. Shama. He's a good-looking young man, very muscular and tall. And next to him is Anisa Job, and Anisa Job does not look 55. Look at her, you would see she's at least a woman in her 30s. The procedure took 3.5 hours. It began with the extraction of Job's bone marrow, the most painful step, which was immediately distilled and concentrated into bone marrow aspirate concentrate, or BMAC, then injected into the discs. Guided by a type of X-ray called fluoroscopy, Dr. Shama inserted a needle through Job's spine to place the BMAC into the discs. Job remained awake for the entire procedure in order to alert Dr. Shama if he touched a nerve. Afterward, Job recovered in bed for 2 weeks and then slowly began to walk. A month later, she showed briskly into the clinic, a moment Dr. Shama recalls with delight. Whereas Job had previously described her pain as beyond 10, she says that it's now a 2. When Dr. Shama published his findings in March 2021 issue of the medical journal Frontiers in Medicine, he reported that 90% of his patients gained 2 to 3 millimeters of height that had been lost due to disc compression, and 80% of them stopped using opioids. The use of stem cells is part of a field called regenerative medicine, which emerged 2 decades ago as a way to deploy the body's own cells to repair tissues by restoring their lost function. Several such therapies have already been approved by the regulatory agency around the world. The FDA has approved stem cell treatments for certain cancers, blood disorders, and immune disorders, but many more are in use, including skin substitutes for treating burns and healing surgical incisions. As researchers report from clinical trials all over the world, the hope is that stem cells will revolutionize the treatment of many conditions over the next decade. For instance, a study treating congenital vision loss with retinal stem cells at the University of California, Irvine, one woman was able to see her family clearly for the first time in years. A German child suffered from sometimes fatal skin disease called epidermolysis bullosa, recovered after receiving a transplant of genetically modified skin cells at the University of Modena at Reggio Emilia in Italy. The actress Selma Blair reported last August that she was in symptom remission after participating in a stem cell transplant trial for multiple sclerosis, and a study on treating osteoarthritis underway in Ireland, France, and the Netherlands shows promising initial results. Despite these early successes, Dr. Sharma cautions that the science is so new that it's easily misunderstood and misapplied. There are a lot of snake oil salesmen out there, he says, pointing to private stem cell clinics all over the world that claim to cure such things as erectile dysfunction or dementia without genuine evidence and in defiance of regulatory bodies. It's important for patients to learn what is possible right now and what is still down the road. In the future, says Shane Shapiro, MD, assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. We're looking at regenerative medicine as something that will one day be a medical specialty of its own, much like cardiology or neurology. An early breakthrough occurred in 2006 when Shina Yamanaka, MD, a molecular biologist at Kyoto University in Japan, showed that stem cell therapy could avoid the morally divisive use of embryonic stem cells. Instead, he discovered he could induce adult skin cells to develop into blood, bone, and liver cells. Dr. Yamanaka, who went on to win the Nobel Prize in 2012 for this work, differentiated these cells from the kind found in a fertilized egg, calling them induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPSCs. While an embryo's cells could turn into any part of the body, iPSCs could create many different types of tissues, but not all. This discovery moved the stem cell conversation past the sensitive subject of using fetal tissue for medical purposes, which is illegal in some countries, and the research began to take off. In 2014, Tokyo's Riken Research Institute performed the first successful iPSC transplant, creating retinal cells generated from skin cells of a patient with age-related macular degeneration, a serious eye condition, which we're all familiar with. Shortly afterward, Henry Classen, MD, at the University of California, Irvine, oversaw a trial for treating retinitis pigmentosa, a group of rare genetic disorders causing gradual blindness, in which a donor's retinal progenitor cells were transplanted into the eyes of 28 participants. One of them, Kristen McDonald of Los Angeles, who had gone blind, regained what she described as a burst of light. "I can navigate by light now and see more constant shapes," says McDonald, now 65. She has since become an outspoken patient advance for stem cell trials. Then in 2018, neurosurgeon Richard Fessler, MD, of Rush University Medical Center in Chicago, oversaw a year-long trial with iPSC-derived motor neurons transplanted into 6 patients paralyzed with spinal cord injuries. Dr. Fessler reported that all regained some upper body movement, and that a patient who was able to only shrug his shoulders could now eat, write, and do other tasks with his hands. Wow. This is the kind of breakthrough that the late actor Christopher Reeve, best known for playing Superman, was advocating for from his wheelchair after suffering a neck-down paralysis following a horseback riding accident in 1995. At that time, governments around the world were making moves to restrict embryonic stem cell research. In certain cases, embryonic stem cells are in medical use today. They're derived from leftover blastocysts, the clustering of eggs in a fertilized egg, that didn't implant during IFV treatment. These are still early days, with much to investigate in terms of safety and dosing, not to mention the question of how manufactured iPSCs for different conditions. But Dr. Yamanaka predicted in 2018 that several treatments using regenerative medicine and new drugs will be developed, authorized, and covered by insurance as soon as 2030. In the meantime, the first generation of stem cell treatments that have regulatory approval in the United States as well as in Canada and Europe largely involve simple cell transplants, one that moved the patient's own cells from one part of the body to another, such as the procedure Dr. Sharma performed on Anissa Jobe. That said, still some stem cell transplants for blood diseases such as leukemia, which have been carried out for several years, are the one exception where cells from matching donor are also allowed. Among approved procedures, the most common is the transfer of BMAC to the spine or the knee. While Job sought treatment for her back pain, Rudolph Corsini, now 58, was looking for relief from job-related knee pain when he visited Humanitas Research Hospital in Milan, Italy in 2020. He hadn't heard of BMAC until it was suggested to him by a surgeon, Elisaveta Cohn, M.D., who didn't see enough damage to merit knee replacement surgery. Corsini agreed to the injection, and it was a success. "I could do almost everything I did before," he says. Dr. Cohn, along with some European colleagues, is now involved in a number of exploratory studies, including comparison of treating patients with BMAC and another type of adult stem cell called stromal vascular fractation, SFV, which is extracted from a person's fat tissue. Will it work? Certainly the inner research on BMAC provides hope, although with limitations. We couch these treatments as something to help with a chronic degenerative condition, something that in many ways can be successful in managing the symptoms and improving quality of life, but in most cases are not a cure, says Dr. Shane Shapiro. The analogy should be a diabetes or high cholesterol. We don't cure those things, we treat them. What we would like to see in the future is a way to treat arthritis without metal and plastic, or to treat degenerative disc disease without spinal fusion. That's the ultimate goal. Researchers at 10 European institutions are currently working together toward that goal, and also on a way to skip the painful bone marrow extraction procedure that Job underwent. Instead, says research scientist Mary Murphy at the National University of Ireland, Galway, they hope to create mesenchymal stem cells in the laboratory in a standardized, cost-effective, and high-volume way. Because regenerative medicine is still young, patients should be wary of profit-hungry companies selling fraudulent stem cell products as if they were magic potions to cure everything from hair loss to Lyme disease. Instead, consult with a medical expert on your specific condition to learn your options. If it's knee arthritis, start with a specialist in orthopedic surgery or sports medicine, advises Dr. Shapiro. If it's degenerative disc disease of the lumbar spine, start with a spine specialist. Then seek a referral to someone in that field who has expertise in regenerative medicine. For many patients, stem cell therapy is already making a lasting difference in their quality of life. My husband and I went hiking last summer, Job says. I walked half a mile. I was so excited, I thought maybe I could start cross-country skiing. Why not? Turn off these turns of phrase. Lake Superior State University compiles an annual list of phrases that should be banished for misuse, overuse, or uselessness among the latest offenders. No worries. Circle back. Deep dive. New normal. You're on mute. And with that, let's switch back over to Consumer Reports. Okay, last week we were finishing up on a thing about best credit cards to have now. And we were talking about how many do I need, should I take advantage of offers of new cards, and does it make sense to cancel the ones I'm not using. There's a couple more entries that we need to finish with. I've heard about cards being closed. Can I avoid this? You can cut the odds. In 2020 and 2021, many Americans had a card canceled or their credit limit reduced out of the blue. While there's no proof way to dodge such cutbacks by credit card issuers, a couple of strategies can help make it less likely. For starters, it's important to take note that many of the cards that issuers closed, at least in 2021, were rarely utilized or dormant, to use the industry jargon. So make sure to use each of your credit cards at least two or three times a year, even if it's just for a small payment. So set up these cards to make automatic monthly payments, perhaps for a streaming service, suggests Schultz. Keep an eye on how much of each card's credit line you're using, too. Some card issuers might become alarmed if you're maxing out a card you typically don't use very much. Could this be a sign that you're experiencing some financial difficulties? It's also helpful to keep your credit utilization at less than 30% of your overall credit limit. If your overall credit limit is $30,000 across all of your cards, your total balances should be under $9,000 in a particular month. And the lower your utilization rate, the better, says Alzheimer. Cardholders with credit scores of 750 or higher had median credit utilizations of 10% or less, according to FICO, a credit score and data analytics firm. What's the simplest way to track my spending? Use the tools you'll find on your bank's website or app to stay on top of your accounts. These allow you to put various alerts and notifications in place. If you're concerned about staying below certain credit limits, for instance, you can set up balance notifications, which tell you when your account balance exceeds a certain amount. Or you can enable spendings alerts for purchases over a specific dollar figure. A payment due alert will provide a heads up for a few days in advance of that deadline. You might also consider opting for a third-party financial app, such as Mint, which connects with your credit card account and provides you with a bigger picture of your finances. How to decide? Use whatever makes it easiest for you to manage your accounts, advises Hartikoff. Another potentially helpful move, turn on the auto-pay feature for your credit card bills to make sure that you never miss a payment deadline. You can choose to auto-pay your bill in full each month, but if your finances are less certain, you may want to rely on payment due reminders and then pay as much as you can on time. Whether you opt for auto-pay or payment due reminders, it's important to examine each monthly statement closely for potential billing errors and fraudulent charges, Rossman says. Also, periodically check over your credit reports. You can get your reports free of charge at annualcreditreport.com. This will not only help protect against ripoffs, but also ensures that your credit history is accurate and you'll be able to qualify for any credit cards that best suit your financial needs. And the truth about those peer-to-peer payment apps, and I will put an editorial thing in here, that the lady I've been dating for the last few years' son got scammed on one of these, so it's pretty careful to watch these. You've probably heard of or may use peer-to-peer P2P payments such as Cash App, Venmo, and Zelle. Cash App was the one that got him. Typically, these apps are tied to your bank account and allow you to send money to someone or accept a payment instantly. That can be handy in situations such as a group dinner with a restaurant. Instead of splitting the bill between multiple credit cards, everyone can send their share via 2P2 to one attendee who can then use a single credit card to cover the tab. But there are potential drawbacks as well. Some of the same qualities that make P2P services so appealing to consumers, speed and convenience, expose them to significant risks, says Chuck Bell, Programs Director of Advocacy at CR and Financial Policy Advocate. With credit cards, you're liable for no more than $50 in the case of fraud or a payment made in error. But P2P payment services generally offer little or no protection against scams, where you pay for an item like a concert ticket but never receive it. Some P2P apps will mediate if you accidentally paid the wrong person, but won't reimburse you directly. For these reasons, the key to use P2Ps only with people you know and trust, says Bell. And double-check that you're sending money to the right person. CR's expert also recommend that you don't use P2P services for business purposes. Look instead for a payment app created for business users, such like Square Cash for Business or traditional PayPal. But it's not friends and family option, which offers fraud protection only in certain circumstances. Keep your app up to date. The latest security fixes can help protect against theft. Alert the P2P if something goes wrong. Let your bank or credit card provider know as well. There's no guarantee, but it may be able to help. And file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. Companies accredited by the Bureau are required to respond, says Sarah Guile, Director of Communications for the International Association of Business Bureaus, Better Business Bureaus. You can also lodge a complaint with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's Consumer Complaint Database. Road Report. Ford Maverick. Sharing some major parts with the Ford Bronco Sport SUV, the low-priced Maverick is a refreshing alternative to larger pickup trucks. It's available with front or all-wheel drive, has a base hybrid powertrain and up-level turbo engine, and comes standard with FCW and AEB. Now's the best time to give your car a spring refresh. Wipers. Replace the blades and prepare for rainy season. Wipers tend to only last about 6 months. Tires. Warm weather means the tires could be overinflated. Check pressures, rises and falls with temperatures. Check monthly and adjust to pressure indicated on the door placard. Cabin air filters. Prepare for pollen season. Well, we're already through that. By replacing this filter, doing it yourself, use the owner's manual for guidance, can save $50 or more. Car wash. If the car was driven in road salt, run it through a car wash to remove any residue. And polish your wax. Provide protection from the spring assault of pollen, bugs, bird droppings, etc. Waxes typically last only 2 or 3 months. Ahead of the curve. Better headlights are here. Adaptive Driving Beams ADB headlights are available in Europe and Canada for years, are now approved for use on new cars in the U.S. ADB headlights provide visibility similar to high beams but limit glare for upcoming vehicles and the vehicle ahead of you, says Jennifer Stockberger, Director of Operations at CR's Auto Test Center and the head of CR's headlight testing program. The vital statistic, 28%, increase in the average listing price of used cars from December 2020 to December 2021. Used car prices are at all-time high, but the good news is if you need to trade in your car to buy a new one, it's going to be worth more than ever, says CR's Jake Fisher, Senior Director of Auto Testing. And we have a recall on Hyundai and Kia. Hyundai and Kia have issued recalls for more than 500,000 vehicles in Catch Fire. 2016 to 2018 Hyundai Santa Fe, 2017-2018 Hyundai Santa Fe Sport, 2019 Hyundai Santa Fe XL, 2014-2015 Hyundai Tucson, 2014 and 2016 Kia Sportage, and 2000 to 2018 Kia 900. Dealers repair the issue at no charge. Park outdoors until the recall is complete. For more information, call Hyundai at 855-371-9460 or Kia at 800-333-4542. How to make your car last 200,000 miles. Holding onto your vehicle for as long as possible is the best way to save right now. One day during my high school years, my dad got excited because the odometer on his car, a 1983 Toyota Camry hatchback that he'd bought several years earlier, was about to reach 200,000 miles. We were in the middle of running afternoon errands, but he pulled over to the side of the road so he, my brother, and I could sing happy birthday to the car to mark its major milestone. It was a silly thing to do, but we felt a collective sense of pride that the car was still going strong after all those grueling suburban commuter miles piled on. That pride remained with me for years. Later, when I was still driving the same Camry past its 300,000-mile mark, I've owned a handful of other cars that rolled through 200,000 plus miles since then. Now, years later, my job is to research and write about automotive repair and maintenance. But you don't need to be an expert to get your car to that milestone. I always stay on top of regular maintenance, and I take care of even small repairs before they become bigger, more expensive. Turning the page. Issues. After all, there's plenty that could go wrong with a car that could technically be ignored if the car still starts and gets you to where you need to go. But neglecting small repairs and maintenance issues that crop up is a bad habit that can shorten your car's life. I also put some effort into keeping my cars clean to protect against corrosion and make them look nice. John Ibbotson, Consumer Reports Chief Mechanic, says it's not rocket science. If you take care of your car, it will take care of you. Fred Helrich, who lives in Annapolis, Maryland, says he has several cars past the 200,000-mile mark and a couple of vehicles that made it more than 400,000 miles, everything from a Chevrolet van to a Toyota Tercel. It helps to get a good car to begin with, he says, echoing CR's long-standing advice to buy models with a strong track record of reliability. That way you know you'll probably go pretty far if you take care of it. Taking care of and holding on to a reliable car, rather than buying or leasing a new one every few years, is almost always a smart financial move. These days, though, with used car prices more than 50% above pre-pandemic levels and the average new car price over $46,000, you may be especially smart to hang on to what you have. Whatever the reason, saving money, the comfort of familiarity, avoiding the worry of new car dings and scratches, it can be a rewarding experience to keep your car going. In the following pages, we'll tell you what to expect as your car goes, ages, and how to make sure it becomes a 200,000-mile champ. Cars that go the distance. We compiled the top 10 vehicle car brands for used vehicles based on the current average reliability of their 2012 model lineup. We've also highlighted the most reliable 2012 model within each brand. For those in the market for a reasonably priced used vehicle, these are the winners. Our list points to the brands with cars that hold up over time and that you can rely on to get you to 200,000 miles with the fewest repair bumps. The reliability scan score for the number one is the Lexus CT200H at 93. The Toyota Prius came in at 86. The Acura TSX came in at 79. The Honda Civic at 70. The Nissan at 67. The Mazda Miata, which is kind of a surprise, got a 66. The Volvo S60, a 54. The Subaru Legacy, a 50. The Mercedes-Benz E-Class at a 47. And GMC Canyon at a 42. What to expect on the way to 200,000 miles. As your car ages, Some parts are more likely to wear out specific mileage benchmarks. Below, we show you the repairs and prices you can expect at various mileage intervals for a late model Toyota RAV4 and a popular small SUV. If your car is out of warranty, finding an independent shop you trust is likely to save you money. From 0 to 36,000 miles. During this traditional warranty period, maintenance will be limited to regular oil changes, tire rotations, and inspecting the brakes, wipers, and tires for wear. You can save by replacing simple items yourself, such as wiper blades. Beyond wear items, the vehicle's various parts and systems will be under warranty, so you can go to the dealership for repairs. And a typical repair cost for the Toyota RAV4. By the way, I've actually driven the RAV4. It's a very nice car. Oil changes are $60. Tire rotation is $60. Windshield wiper blades are $60. Wow, they've gotten expensive. 36 to 60,000 miles. Your car is likely to need tires during this time. Be sure to consult CR's tire expert tire reviews. Your brake pads also, and maybe the rotors could be nearing the end of their service life and should be checked and replaced as necessary. Tires, $972. Wheel alignment for four wheels, $297. And brake pads for a pair, $607. 60 to 100,000 miles. Most vehicles are out of warranty at this point. Continue to monitor brakes and tires for wear and pay closer attention to suspension parts such as shock absorbers, struts, and bushings. It's better to replace suspension and brake parts in pairs. Be sure to get a four-wheel alignment when you buy new tires or have suspension parts replaced. Front struts cost $979, rear struts, both of them, $600, control arms, both, $605, 100,000 to 150,000 miles. Major services such as timing belt replacement, if your timing belt breaks, believe me, that is no fun, been there, done that, are typically needed, and you can expect items such as spark plugs, the starter, the alternator, and suspension parts to need replacing. In theory, if you get that stuff replaced in the 100,000 to 150,000 mile range, the cycle starts again and you should be good for quite a while. Water pump assembly is $748, spark plugs are $215, and alternator is $540. 150,000 to 200,000 miles. This is when your car may need some major repairs, such as replacement of leaking engine oil seals, a transmission rebuild or replacement, a new exhaust system, and possibly a head gasket replacement. The potential for big repairs goes up after 150,000 miles. Head gasket is $4,000. Transmission replacement is almost $8,000. Muffler replacement is $725. You know, I would think at that point you're almost probably better off buying a new car. I know when I had a car that had 140,000 miles on it, and the repair work estimated for some front-end problems I had was going to be almost $6,000, and I could get $4,700 on a trade-in. I did the trade-in. How to join the 2000K Club. The first rule of getting a car to 200,000 miles and beyond is to follow a maintenance plan. That's why automakers include a schedule in the owner manual of every car they sell. Taking care of basics such as timely oil changes and checkups can uncover small problems before they metastasize into bigger, more expensive ones. Keeping your car clean inside and out helps prevent rust and damage to upholstery. Everything is interconnected, so when one part fails, it can put more strain on other parts, causing them to fail too. Oil changes. Changing and topping off engine oil and transmission fluid of differential oil for all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive vehicles are the bedrock of auto maintenance. How often? Every 3,000 to 10,000 miles, depending on the model. Where to go? A repair shop you trust. Avoid chain establishments because they might use cheap oil and filters. Average price, anywhere from $30 to $150. Smart tip. Use the type of oil recommended in the manual and don't splurge on synthetic unless the manual calls for it. Tire replacement. Replacing tires when the tread is thin or when they're older than 10 years. Rough roads and worn suspension parts on the car can cause tires to wear faster. How often? It can be from 30 to 80,000 miles, depending on your car, the tire model, and your driving. Where to go? Your usual trusted repair shop or a specialty tire shop. Average price range is from $550 to $1,300. Smart tip. I'll make an exception to that. That is unless you own a BMW, then it's probably $2,000. Smart tip. Properly inflated tires are safer and save gas. Check the door jam sticker for the proper pressure. It's also important to rotate tires every 5,000 to 8,000 miles to promote even wear. Brakes, disc pads. Brakes won't last as long under frequent stop-and-go conditions or repeated hard braking. Front brakes tend to wear out faster than the rear ones because they provide most of the stopping power. How often? 25 to 70,000 miles. Where to go? Repair shop you trust. Average price $250 to $300. Smart tip. Driving evenly extends brake life and saves gas. Spend more for high-quality brake parts. Inexpensive pads wear quickly, and cheap rotors can more easily warp and cause vibrations when you're driving. Spark plugs. On most cars, spark plugs and other tune-ups items aren't an issue until the 100,000-mile mark. Make sure to get the exact type recommended by the manufacturer. Incorrect plugs can wreck fuel economy and even cause engine damage. How often? Typically 100,000 miles. Where to go? A repair shop you trust. Average price is $200 to $250. Smart tip. When changing spark plugs, make sure the replacements are equivalent in quality to what came with the car to ensure proper performance. Your mechanic can advise you. The timing belt. Not all cars have timing belts, but those that do follow manufacturer recommendation on replacement. The service can be expensive, but skipping it can result in major engine damage, amen, brother, if a worn belt breaks. And particularly if, like me, it breaks on Interstate 40, which was not fun. How often? Usually every 60 to 100,000 miles. Where to go? A repair shop you trust. Average price is anywhere from $600 to $750. Smart tip. It may make sense to replace the water pump, belt, tensioners, and pulleys at the same time to save on future labor costs. Shocks and struts. Shocks, absorbers, and struts soak up road bumps and keep car steady. Like brakes and tires, the lifespan of these suspension parts can depend on the quality of roads where you drive. How often? Shocks and struts can last 80,000 miles or more, but rough roads and aggressive driving can make them wear out faster. Where to go? A repair shop you trust. Average price is $850 to $1,000. Smart tip. High-quality parts will last longer than cheap ones. Be sure the shocks and struts you use meet the manufacturer's specifications. Batteries. Batteries are typically maintenance-free and do their job well for years. How often? Most batteries last from 3 to 5 years. Hot weather and letting the car sit for extended periods can shorten the battery's life. Where to go? An auto parts store. Many install free of charge. Or a repair shop you trust. Average price, $317 to $325. And that was a big surprise to me, because I hadn't bought a battery in years, and I recently bought one, and I was really surprised. Smart tip, inspect your car battery periodically. If you see corrosion on the terminal or it looks like it's leaking, it's time to replace it. Exhaust system and muffler. Most cars come with a stainless steel exhaust system that lasts a long time. When it does wear out, it's probably at high mileage. How often should you look at it? When the rust holes perforate the pipes or mufflers. Where to go? A dependable shop that specializes in replacing exhaust systems and mufflers. The range price range can anywhere from $800 to $850. Smart tip. Be sure to use quality exhaust parts. Cheap ones are more likely to corrode, so you have to pay labor costs for a future replacement. And what are the benefits of driving hybrids? Automakers are embracing electric vehicles more than ever. But if you want to go green and aren't ready to buy a pure plug-in EV, fuel-efficient hybrids, which run on a combination of gas and electric power, are worthy alternatives. They emit fewer greenhouse gases and cost less to run than gas-only autos. They also recharge as they drive, so there's no need to plug in, and there's none of the range anxiety that could come with EVs. Hybrid owners are more satisfied with their vehicles for the models we tested that are often gas-only and hybrid versions. Owner satisfaction was nearly 5 points higher on average for the hybrid version, according to our member survey results. The satisfaction scored for the hybrid versions of the Ford Escape, the Toyota Camry, and the Hyundai, shown below, are greater than the 5-point average. Ford Escape. The base 1.5-liter conventional engine is powerful enough, but it vibrates too much at low engine speeds. The hybrid version of this SUV does away with that annoyance and delivers an impressive 34 miles to gallon overall. Like CR members, our testers found the hybrid version to be more compelling of the two. Smoother operation and 8 miles per gallon, better fuel efficiency are hard to beat. Base range price is $26,000 to $40,000 and the $1,245 destination charge. The Toyota Camry. The regular 4-cylinder Camry is quick and efficient with a comfortable ride, but the hybrid is simply better. It gets a stunning 47 miles per gallon overall, approaching Prius levels, but in a larger midsize sedan. Beyond that, the hybrid, which uses a continuously variable transmission, has a quieter and smoother powertrain, no doubt contributing to its higher owner satisfaction score. And that price range is $26,000 to $37,000. Destination charge is about $1,000. The Hyundai Sonata. The Sonata satisfaction score differential is huge, with the hybrid beating the gas-only version by 17 points. It boasts a significant 13 miles per gallon overall advantage, but it didn't perform quite as well as the gas-powered model in our test, due in part to bumpy shifts and lower slower acceleration. In a survey, Sonata hybrid owners may have prioritized efficiency over those factors. Well, since we're now in June, let's read the introduction to the June thing. I have been reading the May thing, by the way. BuyerAware call to action. Since 1936, Consumer Reports has worked hard to deliver information consumers need to make smarter purchases, and we've worked equally hard to lift the veil on what is truly happening in our increasingly complex marketplace. The powerful history of the consumer movement has many champions, but today we are at a crossroads facing numerous threats from the unchecked power of big tech companies to the countless safety concerns in the products people rely on. Our ability to grow consumer power, or not, will decide our future. That's why I'm excited to share my new book, BuyerAware, Harnessing Our Consumer Power for Safe, Fair, and Transportation Marketplace. It will be published this September. It will provide the trusted advice you have come to expect from CR and explain how we can grow the untapped power of consumers to create a fair and just marketplace for all. In the book, I detail the vital importance of consumer voice in an age that continues to place countless burdens on us. I include inspiring examples of people achieving real change and how CR is holding businesses and governments accountable. I also share how my own passion for consumer rights grew from my life experience. The book is a guide to becoming a stronger consumer-powered force that ensures our marketplace of tomorrow puts people before profits. You'll find advice on moves you can make now, like securing your personal data and avoiding financial tricks and traps, as well as collective actions we must take to rebalance the marketplace in favor of consumers. You can get the first look or pre-order book at buyeraware.cr.org. All proceeds go to support Consumer Reports' nonprofit work. I look forward to hearing your reactions and thoughts. That's Marta Teldado, President and CEO. Building a better world together. Ridding rappers of PFAS, and we just read this last week. A recent CR investigation is already making consumers safer. As reported in our May issue, the CR issues test found that food packaging used by many restaurants and grocery chains contains dangerous per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFASs, which have been tied to a long list of health problems, including immune system disorders, low birth weight, and increase of risk of some cancers. PFAS are known to migrate from wrappers into the food we eat. Within days of publication, several of the companies highlighted, Chick-fil-A's, Nathan Famous, and Restaurant Brands International, which owns Burger King, Popeyes, and Tim Hortons, publicly committed to reducing PFAS. Now CR will make sure those brands follow through on their pledges and work with companies and regulators to eliminate more sources of those dangerous chemicals. You can help by signing two petitions, one telling Arby's to rid its wrappers of PFAS, cr.org/PFAS packaging, the other urging Congress to ban PFAS in all food packaging at cr.org/PFAS Act. Get involved. CR helped spotlight a recent study by Consumers International and Mozilla Foundation, finding that Tinder charged older users more to use certain dating app features. Tinder says it stopped the practice. Many companies use similarly discriminatory algorithms based on factors like where customers live and education levels. 7 in 10 Americans oppose personalized pricing, according to a nationally representative CR survey of 2,341 adults in 2021. Sign our petition at cr.org/pricing, urging Congress to require companies to use pricing algorithms that make the information public. Making cars more efficient. What's at stake? In 2013, the Environmental Protection Agency granted California a waiver to enact auto emission standards and zero-emission vehicle mandate that were more stringent than federal rules. 16 other states subsequently piggybacked on the waiver and adopted the California standards. These rules will not only result in cleaner air and reduce global warming pollution, but will also help drivers save money and ensure that consumers in these states have access to clean cars if they want. By March 2022, the rules would have applied to more than a third of the U.S. population and almost 40% of the U.S. car market. But in 2019, the EPA revoked the waiver. How CR has your back. CR spent the next 2 years trying to restore it. Our mobilization team recruited four CR members to testify in favor of the waiver at a June EPA hearing. And in July 2021, we submitted formal comments to the EPA, along with 48,599 consumer signatures in support of giving states the authority to set their own clean car standards. This past March, the EPA reinstated the waiver. It's critically important that states have this authority, both for times when the federal government fails to act and when it rolls back standards, says Quinta Warren, Ph.D., CR's Associate Director of Sustainability Policy. What you can do is sign our petition urging 15 state attorneys general to end their lawsuit challenging the federal clean car rule at cr.org/cleancars. You can also learn more about the incentive available to purchase all of electric cars at cr.org/incentives. Let's read a couple of letters to before we close out today. Our annual auto issue revealed top 10 picks. I'm going to skip that section because we didn't actually look at that particular magazine. Get scabby about scams. You left out a biggie in your scams on the Rise report. It's a variation of you owe us money type, with the twist being we owe you money. The setup is a faked invoice reflecting a supposed purchase of an expensive item using your credit card. Big letters say, if you didn't order this item, please call this number. The target of the scam calls the vendor to report fraudulent purchase and gives information about which credit card the refund should be applied to. I've received numerous phone calls offering me 50% off my TV service if I paid 6 months up front and with gift cards. Definitely a scam. The scary part was they knew part of my account number, where I lived, and my phone number. I found your scams article very informative, of course. We know that scammers exist, but sometimes it's easier to trust than mistrust. I will certainly follow you on Twitter for more advice on avoiding scams. And a couple of quick life in these United States jokes. I was taking a shower when my 3-year-old granddaughter walked in on me all my glory. Grandma, she said, stunned, you don't have your glasses on. My uncle is a frugal man. He once told the woman at the movie theater box office that since he couldn't remember if he'd seen the film, he wouldn't buy a ticket until he was sure. And with that, he marched inside and found a seat. A half hour later, the manager, followed by two police officers, collared him. As they escorted him out, my uncle shouted, I'm still not sure whether I saw this movie or not. Why are they stealing our trash? My kid, horrified that the garbage men were actually doing their job. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.